everyone, and welcome back to the American Israelite Newspaper Podcast. And this is Podcast 2.0. And why is it 2.0, you may ask? Because, well, the American Israelite has now is going to be reinventing itself again. The podcast will now, Julie has left the building. And now we have Julia. We have a number of guest hosts that will be joining me. The first one is Julia Olson. We'll introduce, say who you are, and, you know, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Julia Olson. I'm an assistant editor at the American Israelite. I'm also getting my PhD from HUC.
Quite impressive. What's your PhD in?
Hebrew Bible, and I'm focusing, my dissertation work is on women and violence in the prophets.
Oh, okay.
Heavy duty.
How much violence is there in the prophets? Well, how about Deborah?
A lot.
Where she kills, isn't it Sisera, the general? Sisera?
That's not Deborah.
That's who is that?
Yael.
Yael.
Deborah's the judge.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But there was one where she kills the, he comes to hide.
She put the tent peg through
his
head.
Right, right. Yeah. He comes to hide in her tent, and then she, like, kills him with the tent thing.
Mm-hmm. She seduces him first.
She
feeds him milk and raisins, the food of seduction in the Bible.
Actually. Oh, really? Milk and raisins is the food of seduction? How come that's never happened to me? Okay, we're moving right along here. Okay, that's disgusting. This is a family program. Let's try and keep it
Hey, it's in the Bible.
Now you have to talk into the mic because you have a very low voice.
To answer your question, there's a ton of violence against women in the prophets, like a lot.
Oh, like give us one example.
It's very violent, and if this is a family program, I don't know if I should.
Okay, well, just keep it clean. Just tell us one.
Well, it's called the marriage metaphor, and it happens in Ezekiel, Jeremiah, and Hosea, and it's this idea that God is married to Israel, and Israel is God's wife.
Right.
And when Israel disobeys and strays away from the covenant, God abuses that wife and leaves her by the side of the road to be physically taken advantage of by people who are passing along the road. And that's a metaphor that's used a lot.
Okay, so you could use that for like the different, all the different countries and kingdoms that warred against Israel and took it over. Because it's like right in the middle of many different planes in different countries, and it was just constantly being destroyed and abused throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, which leads us to abuse on a different scale, and that would be the JCRC Cincinnati holds its annual meeting, and I wanted to say you covered this. It's an excellent story. You got all the points right. You did a really good job on it. So why don't you tell us about the JCRC annual meeting.
Well, I was really impressed with how much the JCRC is doing in the Cincinnati community, and they presented what they were doing really clearly, these different committees that they're forming. So they're dealing with a lot of, they have a committee that's around like gun violence, right, and legislation for safety in communities.
Right, right.
They're looking at the dual refugee crisis from Afghanistan and Ukraine.
Okay.
So they have a lot of different projects that they're working on there. And Daniel Minson mentioned that they're considering JCRC and its projects part of the Cincinnati 2030 strategic plan. So there's an influx of money coming in there for funding for this to work on as well. So that was really cool to learn about that. Ari Balaban is going to be the new director.
Well, we should say that Ari was here, several months ago as a podcast guest.
Yeah, I think May.
So he was at HUC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a PhD student there, and he also has been ordained through HUC.
So. Okay, so he's probably, well, once he's finished with his PhD, he's going to be taking over JCR. Jackie Canjeda went to the Holocaust Humanity Center. Justin Kirshner went to AJC. And so Rabbi Balaban is coming in to fill in for Jackie. And they also have an assistant, too.
Yeah, Spiegel. I think his name is Jared Spiegel.
Okay.
And he just finished his master's at Spertus. So
some
pretty well-qualified people there.
Okay. Does he have any relation to Walter Spiegel?
I wonder if that's his son? I don't know. I
wonder if it's his son. Okay.
But the keynote address was really interesting as well.
Who was the keynote? Was that...
He works for The Atlantic, and now I forgot.
Oh, right. He's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, though. It's Yair.
Okay.
Yair Rosenberg. Right, so he gave a keynote on like the origins of the word anti-Semitism and how it's misused today, which creates confusion around it. It was really interesting, and especially like one of the main issues is that according to the Anti-Defamation League, in 2022 and 2021-22, we've seen the highest level of attacks against Jews in the world. Wow. And really, it's like skyrocketing. And so like this discussion of like what does anti-Semitism mean was really important.
Yeah, what is the definition of it? Yeah.
Yeah, because oftentimes it's nebulous and it's used confusingly.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a really great meeting.
All right. So we want to shout out on the front page to Mark Barsman, who I've actually met and know. And Walter Spiegel presents gifts to Jackie Conjato and Justin Kirshner. And then also Rabbi Ari Bellman is going to be taking over for JCRC.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add before we move on to our next topic?
No, that was it.
Okay. All right. So next week is, and you can see all the family dogs and cats that are on. This is, there's one thing missing here, Madeline. And that would be the pet rock that was told was going to be in this issue. There's no pet rock in here.
I thought we were going to do the company raccoon.
The company raccoon. Well, the company raccoon. So to go back.
Is he gone now?
Yeah, he's
talking about leaving the building.
Right, he's definitely. So there was a raccoon in our roof. Mm-hmm. And we had some roofers because we're doing some roofing work. And they found a big hole back in the. The quadrant back there, and they go, we think we got a problem here because there's a big like hole in the roof, and it's like, well, what should we do? Well, they covered it up, and then they came back like a week later, the roofers, work, and they said, well, we can't work here because this whoever it was, whatever it is, has cut a new hole in the roof over on the corner, and like in the middle.
He's busy.
And then we had the pet critter getter people come out, and they went up in the crawl space and all that, and they said, well, you have a raccoon. And we get, I was like, there's a raccoon? I mean, that's just, so they put in a couple of those traps, that they go in and hit the little thing and it closes the door so they get trapped in there. And then a couple of weeks later, the guy calls up, well, you're only supposed to have one for like 15 days. We can give you another 10 days, and then we have to take it, or you have to pay another $200 for the monthly fee to set them up.
Wow.
And I go, well, I don't want to do, I was thinking maybe I'll go to a different, because these guys haven't been very successful catching this raccoon. Maybe I'll try somebody else. And then he calls up noon on, it was like on a Thursday or something like that. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm coming out today to get the traps. And I go, okay, that's fine. He goes, well, do you want to do the extra month, which is another two? I said, no, I do not. So then I went outside and looked, and guess what? An hour before this guy is supposed to show up to get this, just check the traps, there's a raccoon in the trap.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wow, this is like really
good timing.
Kismet.
Yeah.
This is good timing. And so he came and he got the raccoon, and I think they relocate them out to like East Fork Lake or one of the other, someplace like that.
That guy has a big taxidermy collection.
No, he didn't. No, I think, no, it's, I think he like, he they relocate them.
Okay.
Just so that they're not here.
I thought he was going to be on the staff. You were going to put the raccoon on the payroll.
Well, I was wondering if it's a male or a female.
Because you got to have friends up there.
Right, because if it's a female, then you would have had, babies, and then, then you'd have to get to catch the babies and all that stuff, but I didn't think to ask the guy, how do you check whether it's a male or a female? Right. I mean, I guess you have to, do whatever you have to do to check. Anyway, that's our current mascot and pet here at the American Israelite. Anyway. The pet issues next week, and there is a picture of all the staff pets that are habiting. Yes. All right. So, in additional local news, David Edelson has been installed as a chair of the Board of Governors of HUC and JAR. I guess he's a Cincinnati guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is taking over for Sue Newman Hochberg as chair.
Yeah, so. She was at graduation.
Okay.
So yeah, they confer the degrees and stuff like that in a formal aspect. So
okay, very good.
Big news for HUC.
All right. On page 4, we have a NATO office on Texas Air Base removes a print of a storied Nazi combat pilot. So this there's a NATO U.S. based training program for NATO pilots on this U.S. base in Texas. And one of the, a German Air Force colonel, Stefan Kleinheimer, who's in charge of Euro-NATO joint jet pilot training, has hanging outside his office at the Shepherd Air Force Base in Texas a framed print of a World War II era Messerschmitt 262 fighter jet bearing a swastika on its tail.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And someone said, well, do you think you maybe I want to take that down? And so there was a complaint made, and eventually he took it down.
He did take it down. But I was, how long has it been there? And, like, how long did it not go?
Well, there was this one famous, wasn't there, like, a famous German pilot that was, like, was one of the
best? Yeah, they said he was good with, like, tech stuff.
Like the Red Baron. Yeah. That's, like, that's World War One.
Yeah, that's World War One.
Okay, so this guy's, like, Red Baron of World War Two.
Yeah, they said he was, like, really cutting edge with his style, but, you know, that doesn't matter. That's all canceled out.
All right. So the guy that it was this Wolfgang Bombo Schenk, a decorated Nazi ace fighter and another from World War II. So
yeah,
number of the people complained. And he did finally take it down. So really, not, besides that, there's more national and international in the paper this week.
Yeah.
All right.
We've got the Massachusetts private college firing an employee for racist and swastika graffiti.
Right.
And this was, like, I think a series of, like, events at this same private college.
Curry College? I've never heard of Curry College.
No.
It must be a small liberal arts college.
Yeah, but apparently, so they fired the employee. But apparently there had been other incidents throughout the year of, like, racist and anti-Semitic graffiti and messages. So the school has maybe a deeper problem than a single employee.
And maybe it's possible that JCRC should be contacting this place.
You know what they talked about at their meeting is more work on college campuses. So, you know, that would be interesting.
All right. Also on 5, you have a hate crime charge filed against a protester who beat a Jewish man in New York. So a Palestinian activist has been charged with a hate crime by federal prosecutors for attacking a Jewish man following a rally in April in New York City, the New York Post reported. Saad Masood of Brooklyn allegedly assaulted Matt Greenman because of his actual and perceived religion after a pro-Palestinian demonstration on April 20th in Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's a fraught situation.
People behaving badly.
Yes.
All right. Well, Rabbi Gershon Atzvon has a... his column in this week, and you were talking about that he had two ingrown toenails.
He did. He talks about the reason for his visit to the podiatrist was two ingrown toenails, which really caught my attention when I started reading
the article. I think they just have to, like, cut those out.
Yeah, I used to dance ballet, so I'm familiar.
Okay.
But it was really about, like, discovering a passion, and he was asking his podiatrist, how do you discover a passion for feet?
Right, right.
You know? And he said, you know, the important thing is that you teach your children your passion for the Torah and things like that.
So
it had a good ending.
Okay,
really. So it started. He also talks about Abraham Lincoln's podiatrist. Did you know he had a special podiatrist?
Why?
I guess he had really big feet.
But
he was like the podiatrist to the chief, but eventually that guy had to leave the country because he tried to bill the United States government for millions of dollars because he said that he functioned as the podiatrist in chief to the Union Army, and he never did. So he was trying to, like, defraud the government, and so they made him leave. That's what he talked about.
Where did he go?
Back home. I think he was from, let's see. I can't remember where he was from, but he left to go back overseas.
Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe England. Yeah, here it is. Jewish.
Oh, back to England, yep.
Okay, President Abraham was known to have issues with his feet. He had a Jewish podiatrist, Issachar Zachary, who would travel with him and considered him a personal confidant. He was quite a controversial person. Mm-hmm. Had to leave the USA for England later in life.
That's what I looked it up, because I was like, how is he, how is the controversial podiatry?
Yeah. All right, so there was a fire in Camp Airy for boys, and that was in, was it in Maryland? I think it's in Maryland.
Yeah, and you have, Washington, right?
Well, the Jewish Federation of Washington is going to help them with emergency funds.
$25,000.
Yeah, to meet the camp's current needs to support rebuilding efforts. So there was a fire at Camp Airy for Boys, a Jewish overnight camp, in Thurmont, Maryland. So that must be close to Washington.
Yeah.
Well, the important thing is that that summer camp is, and they're all there right now. It's July today. We should have said that. Okay, today is Thursday, July 7th.
That's right.
Hold on, I have to give you my our Hebrew date. And that would be the 8th of Tammuz, 5782. And this actually is volume 168, which is the 168th year, and it's volume 52. So this is the last issue of year 168, and next week we start on 169.
Cool.
And then and then it'll be 170 in 2 years. That's a lot of that's a lot of years.
That's a lot of volumes.
That's a lot of volume.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on, National Kosher Certification Agency sues JetBlue Airlines saying they lied about a kosher snack.
Yeah, an artichoke snack that's supposed to be part of a Mediterranean-inspired vegan snack box. They claimed was kosher. They put the kosher seal on it.
Right.
And that was not the case, actually.
And it was Kofke.
Right. Yeah, they said that. And that, and now Kofke is not named in the lawsuit. It's not part of the lawsuit because it's not their fault.
But they'll probably have, they'll sue, JetBlue will sue them for having misrepresented that they added the kosher hexer to it. So
that, I feel like, that, like it says, like there's other airlines who have, you know, like had issues with like not serving kosher meals and things like that. So.
Right. Well, it's that's their whole own different little program. You know, when you have kosher food on an airline, someone's got to be overseeing that so that the, you know, and so it's all, you know, everything's good. And sometimes it happens that someone didn't check something. So it's, I don't know if it's intentional. But it just happened, you know, something maybe just overlook something.
I always find the kosher food on airplanes better, so whenever I travel internationally, I request a kosher meal. I hope I'm not part of the problem.
No, you're not.
But it's always better than regular airplane food. So.
Well, that's not saying much, put it that way. All right. So do you want to talk about the leading group, Orthodox group? Okay,
yeah, so there
was
a reversal of a Supreme Court ruling about being able to pray. This football coach was praying at the 50-yard line.
Right.
And, it's a combination of separation of church and state, and also it's called the Lemon Test, which is like how religious is it in comparison to the institution. It's a whole lot of court lingo.
Right.
But basically, they reverse that so that he is allowed to pray on the 50-yard line, and his he says it's voluntary, but his players join him, and I think that's where the controversy is coming. So the Orthodox groups are happy about this because they say it's closer to First Amendment, right, that you now you have real freedom of speech.
Okay.
But it's a real slippery slope because you start to permit that sort of thing and suddenly you can have people proselytizing to students in schools.
Okay.
You know, so I think, you know, it's really dicey and, you know, we're watching a Supreme Court do a lot of crazy stuff right now. So it should be interesting to see how
this Some would call
snowballs.
It crazy and some would call it really good.
Gee, I wonder who would say that.
we won't point that out to our listeners. Nope. All right, so 101-year-old former Nazi guard sentenced to jail.
Yeah.
101-year-old Joseph Schutz was found guilty of being an accessory to murder in at least 3,500 cases while stationed at the Sachsenhausen camp in Oranienburg, north of Berlin. He worked at the camp from 1942 until 1945. The question is, did he know what was going on there when he was working there?
Yes.
Okay, he knew what was going on.
How could you not? The people in the towns next door knew.
Okay, so he knew what was going on.
You don't kill that many people and say, like, well, I'm just going to the office. I wonder what they're doing in that building.
Right,
people
exactly.
go in and they don't come out.
Yes.
Of course, and he claims he wasn't even there.
Okay, so that's, just, that's So how do you prove that he was there?
Right.
Were there records that he was photographed or taken pictures of, or he was like on the? He must have been on the payroll.
You'd think so.
He got a check from somebody. He got paid.
Yeah. So it's He says he's going to appeal.
A little dicey.
But he said he won't even get any jail time because he's 101.
Okay.
So.
At least, but he was convicted of being an accessory to murder,
over 3,000 counts of murder.
Right, right.
Yeah.
All right, so Ben and Jerry says on page 8, Ben and Jerry said it opposes, this is the company, Ben and Jerry's opposes parent company, which is Unilever. Yep. So Ben and Jerry's was an independent ice cream manufacturer, was purchased by Unilever, and now Unilever is now selling off. They're keeping everybody else's, like America and Europe and everything else, but they're selling off the Israeli rights to the people that make it in Israel, because they're tired of the controversy. Yeah. They don't want to be involved in the controversy.
Yeah.
So this goes into the whole what's happening there on the ground.
Right, and if the listeners don't know, the controversy is that Ben and Jerry's did not want to sell their product in what they refer to as occupied Palestinian territory.
Right.
And that's been seen as anti-Semitic.
Yes.
And so this has been going on for a really long time. And Unilever originally said they weren't going to do anything about it. And then they've now reversed that. And they have decided to sell the Israeli rights, which, of course, Ben and Jerry's is going to oppose.
Well, if you go back in time, Ben and Jerry's is two Jewish guys that started that.
I mean, the question is you have to decide, how much do you like a free market?
Right.
Versus how much do you like... Because that's a company's decision,
right,
you know,
right.
Versus, like, how much is it affecting
customers? How do you be political? It's like everybody's got all this political correctness going on right now, and so somebody's going to come up with political correctness of talking about this on the American Israelite podcast. Are we allowed to talk about this? Well, you know, so any topic that we come up with that's controversial, where do you draw the line at what's controversial and what's not controversial?
I think that line is being moved, like,
Constantly.
Back and forth.
All right. Check it out.
We're not hearing the last of this by any means.
All right. So international is on 9. There's some interesting stories. Please go read. And then we hop to page 12 in Israeli politics. So this is a major story. So last week, the Knesset disperses, and Israeli elections are set for November 1. So there was a vote on, I think something was announced, some kind of, you would know better than me maybe what happened, because there was a vote on June 29th, and Bennett could not get the votes, and then several of his coalition members said, we're not going to be participating in this, we're done, you're on your own now.
He's got the Boris Johnson treatment. Which is what's happening to Boris Johnson in the UK.
He's getting
literally
thrown
right
out
now.
Too.
He's resigned today.
Did he resign today?
Yeah, because some of his cabinet members were like, nah, we're done with you. So basically, it's kind of what happened to Bennett. And so he's not going to run again, and he's thrown his support then behind Lapid. But Netanyahu is obviously going to try to make a comeback.
Oh, definitely. All right, so let's go back. So on June 30th, was set for November 1 is the country's next general elections. And this is we've had, I think, is it three or four in
five.
The last five?
Five.
Five general elections in the last three years.
That's so stressful.
Okay.
We can barely handle them once every 4 years.
Yes, we can. Yes. All right, and Bennett said he will not run again. He's done. So I guess he'll still be in the Knesset. Mm-hmm. He just won't be... He was only there for maybe a year.
Yeah, it's not long.
And he did not want anything to do with being the prime minister.
Mm-mm.
So that's a lot of pressure in 1 year.
Yeah.
And different topics and stuff. And he said this is just, it's ungovernable.
Yeah. You know,
it's very difficult to govern.
It's going to be interesting to watch that play out come November.
So it's now July. So you've got July, August, September, October, and then they'll vote November 1. So you've got about 4 months until the election.
Mm-hmm. And they said that even the date of the election was contested because November 1st is what was agreed upon, but they originally wanted an earlier date, October 25th, when yeshiva students, who are more likely to vote more Orthodox, would be on holiday. But that didn't pass. So, you know, that Netanyahu might take a hit from not having those voters.
Okay. So they'll be back in time for the November 1 vote.
They'll
the
be
yeshiva
in school,
student.
I think.
They'll be in school. So then they will go vote.
Hopefully.
Okay. All right. Gas prices in Israel reach near record high. And you were talking, I mean, they are in liters.
Yeah.
And how many, it's like.
They said it's, so it's $2.38 per liter, which is 0.2 gallons. So you're looking at over $10 a gallon.
Oh my goodness. So 1 gallon of gas is like $10 a gallon in Israel.
Maybe probably a little more.
Well, so where do they have, they don't have refineries in Israel, I don't think. I think they come from the Arab states.
I think so.
Okay, so they can't, the oil and the refineries come from, now Israel has a huge, tremendous natural gas field out right off their coast, which will be a natural gas field for the next couple hundred years, I guess, but they don't have gasoline.
Mm-mm.
All right, so it's like $10 a gallon. You were saying before that you filled up your tank and it was like 100.
No, I said if I would have filled up my tank in Israel, it would be like $130 because, you know, 13-gallon
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they said it's $100 to fill up a tank, to fill up an average-size Israeli car over in Israel. And here, if we have a little bit larger gas tanks, yeah, you're looking at $130, $140 to fill up. So,
well, they don't really drive a lot, I don't think, in Israel. I think that a lot of it's very public transportation, buses.
But not on the country. Like, when I excavated
if you
want to
get
Dan,
around.
You were looking at a lot of cars getting dinged up out there on the road. But I'm taking a 700-mile trip next week to visit my family.
Yeah.
And with $5 a gallon, that's going to be the most expensive trip I take for the past couple of years.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're all feeling that, I think.
All right. Around the community on page 14, hundreds of people showed up. We're calling them 300 philanthropists, showed up at the Jewish National Fund. It was its annual breakfast. The photos that are here are from the night before where the major givers had a event. And I don't know, it's somebody's house or some place. I don't know where
it looks beautiful.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. I think it's somebody's house. And a lot of the famous people from Cincinnati are in this. One of our previous guests on the show, Maury Weiner, is right there. And
did you take these pictures?
No, these were submitted by them, by Jewish National Fund.
Good pictures.
Yeah, very nice. They did a good job. Check that out. You probably know most of the people in the photos. All right. That was when Noah Tishby was in town.
Oh, right.
And she was also signing her book at that event. All right, so we move on to pin and page, and the NEA, National Education Association, has no business platforming hate. And you read this, so why don't you give us your take on that?
Well, it's a group of people from Hadassah who are writing this, and they said that there's three new business items to be voted on for the NEA this year, and it's about distorting facts about Israel and could help fuel anti-Semitism, making schools less safe for Jewish teachers. And we already have teachers, you know, who don't want to identify as Jewish anyways. But they talk about these, the education doesn't permit for the discussion of the Israeli-Palestine conflict in a fair way.
Right.
So basically, if you have, you're not, you know, people, they're not learning about Palestinian leadership and organizations sponsoring terrorism, that's not being taught. And so the authors of this op-ed think that, you know, this is a way that the NEA is platforming hate, and they're really supposed to be, you know, non-biased, you know.
Right, the NEA should be neutral. It should be totally neutral and inclusive, right?
Yeah, so they're arguing that the NEA is actually going against its own doctrine of inclusivity.
Right.
Yeah. It's very interesting. They make a good argument.
Okay, so check that out. That's on page 18, the opinion page. And also there's another Licking Ben and Jerry's op-ed.
That's an interesting one about how this Ben and Jerry's is almost like the next step to like really certifying the things that the PA is saying and you know, giving them an equal fighting ground. So it's
are definitely complex. Out there speaking their mind on college campuses, at the NEA, at all these places. And I don't know if the Jewish community really is countering this or has a lobbying group that's countering any of that stuff. I mean, if you remember, like a week or two ago, there was somebody was following the IDF students on their phones.
Oh yeah, with the fitness app.
Okay, and then there's all then we were in Massachusetts. There were people that were tracking people from their phones on all the different Jewish activities that was going on. Remember that?
That's alarming.
Yeah, very alarming. Yeah. So things are going on out there that we have no control over, but we need to find out who's doing all this.
Mm-hmm. And what's the best response is, right? How do you create a unified response?
Okay. All right. All right, so we move on to Seder of the Week by Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. It's Shabbat Shalom, Parshas Chukat.
He's talking about one of my favorite stories here, actually.
Go ahead.
So he's talking about Moses striking the rock.
And right. Numbers, and he hit it twice.
And he hits it twice.
Okay, but so we were talking before the show that this is your mention. This is the second time this happened.
Yeah,
the first time.
Yeah, in Exodus 17,
right,
verses 1 through 7. God and Moses have basically the same conversation. Moses does it, and he does it right this time. And everyone's like...
The first time, he hits it
Exodus.
Once.
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
And everyone's like, oh, he's such a good leader. So that's the end of that story. It's like, wow, Moses is really awesome.
So he hits the rock. He hits the rock with his staff.
Yeah.
And water comes pouring out.
Yeah. Stops all the kvetching.
Okay, stops it. Okay, then this time, he hits the rock twice. Mm-hmm. And that was what really got God, Hashem, upset and said... Because of you not listening to me, not trusting in me, that when I told you just to hit the rock once, you hit it twice, you will never see the land of Israel.
Right. So and that's you got to keep in mind that Miriam has just died right before this.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, God says Moses and Aaron can't enter into the promised land. And all of a sudden, you have the leadership, you know, the original leaders.
Miriam,
of the group.
Aaron, and
none
Moses.
Of them get to make it to the promised land.
Why was Aaron not? He just died, but he wasn't. Why was he not? Was there a reason that Aaron wasn't allowed in?
Dies beforehand, but he's kind of part and parcel with Moses.
Oh, because of the golden calf.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's always.
He didn't stand up against them. They were going to kill me.
That's my favorite part of that story is that when Moses asks, "What is this?" Aaron literally says it came out of the fire that way. That's the ultimate excuse.
It just came out of the fire as a golden calf.
Yeah, I just helped host the party. I wasn't planning it, you know. But yeah, the Seder, I really enjoyed it this week, so very good.
All right, so we move on to From the Pages, the Jewish Bicentennial Snippet. Each week, the American Israelite will print one milestone related to the history of the Cincinnati Jewish community over the last 200 years, provided by the Jewish Cincinnati Bicentennial Committee. Each milestone weaves Jewish history within the greater context of our community's development and our country at large. All right. 1940, Standard Textile is established by Charles Hyman, a Holocaust survivor and refugee, as a small business based out of the Hyman family's third-floor apartment in Cincinnati. I thought it was in his garage, but I guess it was in his apartment, plus and his garage, too.
Yeah, probably.
The company grows quickly and in 1945 expands to an old shoe factory in downtown Cincinnati. Now it's worldwide.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yes, it's worldwide. Okay. They do almost $1 billion a year in business. It's tremendous.
Wow.
It's huge.
That's
so
cool.
So shout out to the Hyman family.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what else did you like on From the Pages this week?
Well, 100 years ago, someone wrote an op-ed about let there be no division. And it's this idea, they're saying, well, Rabbi Stephen Wise is trying to open his own Jewish institute in New York.
Now, this is Rabbi Wise's, one of his 14 children, right?
I don't think they're related.
Oh, they're not related.
Mm-hmm. I think they were colleagues, but they weren't related.
Oh, I didn't know that, because I thought Stephen Wise was an editor here at the paper at one point.
Yeah, I think they're, you know, I think they were friends.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I don't think that they were related.
Okay.
But
I always thought they were related. See, that's I found something else.
Well, now I have to make a note and double check.
Okay, we'll have to
we
check
might
that.
We might have a mea culpa next time I'm on here.
Okay, we'll check that. We'll check that.
But so the Rabbi Stephen Wise was going to open this Jewish Institute in New York, and apparently, believe it or not, Hebrew Union College here in Cincinnati was not cool with that because they were like, no, we can train everybody. We have the facility.
Right.
We have the land. We have the faculty. Like, why are you going to do this? And so there was some bit of a debate. And the author of
starting
this,
the competition.
Yeah, the author of this column was like, we already have enough division. Like, wouldn't it be, isn't it awesome that we have two Jewish institutions? Like, now people can choose. And really, the whole thing is rendered moot because due to budget constraints, Rabbi Stephen Wise has to eventually collaborate with HUC, and they create HUC-JIR.
Okay.
So they end up merging shortly after the school is founded.
Okay.
Or not shortly after, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things. So
Anything so, you like from 75 years ago? Anything? Or I liked something in 50 years ago, and that was 50 worldwide sale of Israel bonds hits $2 million. Mm-hmm. And that was 1972. $2 million a year going to the state of Israel to build the state of Israel. Mm-hmm. And it's only been since 48.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's like 24 years later, they're doing $2 billion a year in Israel bonds and building up the state, which if you are, have you been to Israel yet?
Yeah.
Okay. It's like a modern, it's like, like here.
Oh, yeah.
Like a modern town, modern city, modern country. Mm-hmm. Very modern.
Yeah.
That money has, over the last 50 years, has built all of Israel.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. So. Great place.
All right. 25 years ago, Star Wars collectibles on Hillel's auction block. May the force be with you as you bid on a collection of Star Wars items in Cincinnati. Dozens of mint-condition Star Wars collectibles will be at the annual Hillel Auction Extravaganza, Sunday, July 20, from 5:30 to 9:00 at Marison Hall, HUCGAR. Hillel's Vice President Stephen Lerner says, this is one of the most exciting auction extravaganzas ever. There is tremendous variety in the items to be auctioned, ranging from antique Judaic to the latest of electronic gadgets. I think some of the stuff that was, I'm not sure, but I... Some of the Star Wars items were built by a local company. There was a local company that was a Cincinnati that made a lot of these items, so they would have been mint condition.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I wish I could have been there. I would have spent a lot of money.
Yes, I would, me too. the American Israelite gets first place at the AJPA Award. So American Israelite won a Simon Rockauer Award for Excellence in Jewish Journalism in the American Jewish Press Association's 1996 competition. There were more than 600 entries in this year's competition. The Israelite previously won awards in 92, 93, and 94 Rockover competition. Hmm. So many That's of the cool. awards that we've won through the years.
That's great. What All happened right. in 95? You got 92, 93, 94, and then 96.
Skipped a year. All right. Jews in the News, check it out. Oh, yeah. On page 21, there is a story about Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman... Her grandmother used to live at Cedar Village.
Her last name is Hirschlag.
Really? Her actual real name is Hirschlag.
Natalie Hirschlag.
Oh, okay. Yep. She was one of my, you know, my, I don't know.
A crush?
Yes, crush.
I can see that on your face.
Crush.
Hey, Queen Amidala, she was, she was great.
Yeah, all right. So, dining out Stone Creek this week. Check that out.
That sounded good.
And then we go to columnists in the lifestyle section, and Lori Kleiner Eckert has high school reunions, love them or loathe them. So you've been out of high school. How long have you been out of high school?
Ladies never reveal their age.
You never reveal. Come on.
I graduated in 2007.
All right, so it'd be 15. Mm-hmm. You're at 15 year reunion.
I don't go to any of them.
You don't go to them.
No.
Okay, I go to everyone. I go to everyone of them.
I don't want to see people.
I go to every one of them.
You're the Facebook generation. I already know what they're doing, and I don't want to see them or meet their children.
Okay, so I graduated in 76. So next, not 4 years, we'll be 50.
Okay.
So it'll be 2026. Will be our 50th reunion. And I plan on definitely going.
Yeah. And you graduated in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, Walnut Hills.
So I'm like far removed. Right, I graduated on the Canadian border of Minnesota. Going back there alone is like you got to rent a dog sled.
Do you really? You
know, no, but.
Even in the middle of, right now it's like summertime. Yeah. It's like 90 degrees here in Cincinnati. Border.
Yeah, it's, no, I, you know, it's such a work to get up there. And it's a very small town and everyone is still there. So
all the same
sad.
People that you knew from high school.
Yeah.
They're all married with kids now.
I'm the only one that left. So.
You're the only, are you serious? You're the
there's
only
a couple
one?
People, but not
How many
many
people
of us.
Were in your class?
80.
80?
Yeah.
We had like 350.
Yeah. Before that, before I moved up there, I would have graduated in a school where the graduating class was 60.
Really?
So when I moved to International Falls, I was like, it was a town of 6,000 people. It was the biggest town. I was like, this is huge. The school had two stories. I got lost every day. Yeah. But she writes that in the high school reunions, people have like really like triggering responses.
What does it say where she went to high school?
Mm.
I think she's a Cincinnatian? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. City High.
Okay.
All right. University City High.
Okay.
But yeah, she says that like people have like real visceral responses. That
they do. It's either you love them or hate them. Mm-hmm. And either you go to them or you don't go. I know people that will not go to them. They're just like, I'm not going to that thing. I'm just not going to go. And then a lot of my buddies, yeah, of course I want to go and say hello to everybody. Because the first thing people, if you go to a reunion, they ask you like five questions. Mm-hmm. Every single person you go, so where do you live? Mm-hmm. What do you do? Mm-hmm. Do you have your kids? Well, you know, it's the same thing. And then you talk to someone for like 10 minutes and you ask them and they ask you. Mm-hmm. Then you go to the next person, you ask them the same question. Like, and then you go to the next person. Yeah. It's like the same thing. Like, you know, 50 people later, it's the same, you know, you've got your story down pat.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the same story every time.
I could see going simply because I love gossip. Okay. And I'd love to know the dish on what happened. Like, you know, the people that
some
you
of the
like,
people were like the cool people really in high school were like the duds in real
super
life.
Losers. Yeah.
And some of the like the nerdy people turned out to be like really successful. Yeah. And it is very interesting because some of the people you thought were being like the most popular people were like the biggest duds.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and then the people that were just like the normal people turned out to be like the most successful. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
Yeah, that's
like
what's
shot and fraud,
about
right?
It.
Where I'm just like,
just to show up is the difference.
Failed. Yeah.
All right. We have a book review this week by Cheryl Pockros, who always does a great job.
Yeah.
Judaism Without Tribalism, A Guide to Being a Blessing to All the Peoples of the Earth by Rabbi Rami Shapiro.
This sounded really interesting, actually, mm-hmm. and really accessible. You know, she said it's not super long. It's not some heavy academic tome. Really accessible.
She does a very good job of reading these books. And, this is only, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 10. And she takes a book and distills it down to about 10 paragraphs. Mm-hmm. And gets all the major points and all the, all the important stuff in those, and does a really great job.
Yeah, she always does a great job.
As the publisher, I am blessed with a very talented staff. I don't tell them enough because I need to keep them on their toes all the time. But I do have a very talented staff, and I just let them do their thing. I don't tell, except once in a while when, you know, we have to adjust a article that we were talking about like this morning, that you have to maybe adjust a little bit here and there, but I let people just do their thing unless it's, I just let them do their thing and they usually do a fantastic job.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, if you trust the people with autonomy, then you're going to get a good product every time. Yeah.
All right. So on to obituaries and death notice. There was a national one, actually an international, David Weiss Halivni, mm-hmm. was pioneering and sometimes controversial Talmudist, dies at 94. And you were talking about where he came from, what he was talking about.
Yeah, he taught at JTS, mm-hmm. but he left in 1983 because JTS decided to ordain women, which he was not cool with.
All right.
So, you know, he's leaning a little bit more on the conservative side than JTS, but he was a controversial Talmudist because he chose to read the Talmud as not a received text as a whole piece of text, but rather something that we call the source critical tradition, which is reading it and finding the different voices and seeing where different edits have been made. And that was really groundbreaking, but it really shook a lot of people's understanding of the text. So
give us a background on what you have the Torah and the Talmud. So give us a background on what the Talmud is. Well, you could say it's a commentary on every page of the Torah, basically. Yeah. It's a commentary on all that.
And the rabbis discussing, what does this law mean when we're going to apply it here? You know,
right.
Isn't that where you get the discussion where it's like if your neighbor falls into a hole on Shabbat, can you pull them out?
Yes, you can, because it's saving a life.
Right.
Saving a life is more important than anything else.
Right. But that's like, you know, that sort of like almost like litigation is happening, and you have these great minds and the sages discussing these laws and, you know, further understanding the Bible.
It basically is law. It's it's like law and rules and regulations of law and all that kind of stuff. The other thing, one of the major things in the Torah is don't ever embarrass anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to ever embarrass anyone in any situation. If you think you're going to, then you're better off just not saying anything because you don't want to embarrass them publicly, privately, anyway. That's, you know, one of the biggest things.
It's all over in Proverbs.
Yeah.
And also remember Noah's son? Noah's son does that. Noah passes out drunk, and he sees his father undress. Right.
That was his grandson. His grandson.
No, it's his son, but then he curses the grandson. That's a very confusing story. Biblical scholars still don't know what to do with it, but it's the idea that the son has embarrassed the father by mocking his father for falling asleep drunk and naked. Okay. And so it's like, that's the idea. You just don't do that.
Okay.
Which that's, I can totally get behind. Don't embarrass
okay.
people.
That's in Noah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Death notes. We have one, and that would be Thomas Frohman, age 68, died June 28, 2022, 29, Savan, 57, 82. May his memory be for a blessing. All right, we move on to the coupon page. Mm-hmm. Go check out Rhino's frozen yogurt and soft serve.
Good season for it.
Yummy.
Especially with all these power outages. Got to find a way to keep cool.
And if you have in your keep in your freezer, don't open the door because it'll melt.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then on the last page we have 10 Tony Award and including Best Musical, The Band's Visit, a new musical from July 19th to 24th at the Aronoff Center for the Arts in Cincinnati. Where is my joke of the week?
I didn't print it. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well, I have one here, but you'll have to, find it. And you'll have to wait one uno momento for me to get this out.
Page 21.
I don't have page 21. Oh, here. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So we will do joke of the week. Or actually, bad joke of the week.
Bad joke of the week.
All right. So this is from the Encyclopedia of Jewish Humor from the Biblical Times. From the Encyclopedia of Jewish Humor from Biblical Times to the Modern Age, compiled and edited by Henry D. Spaulding. All right. Jacob Rappaport announced the judge, "For breaking into a house in the middle of the night, I sentence you to 2 years in prison." "But, Your Honor," pleaded Rappaport, "last time I was in court, you sentenced me to a year in jail for breaking into a house during the day." It was at night, okay? And it's during the day. "If not in the middle of the night and not in the middle of the day, just when am I supposed to earn a living?"
Wait, hold on.
All right, so... we want to welcome our new co-host, Julia Olson. Thanks for your time and troubles and
thank you.
Pleasure of being with you. And it gets better as time goes along.
Are you saying I did poorly?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, you know, it's important that we have good rapport between us. And so you'll be on once or twice a month with me.
Yeah.
We do have a couple of other guests. So I've got Pam Geller and my lovely wife, Stephanie. And then my friend Lori Platt will come on once in a while, too.
Cool.
So I think next week it's Pam Geller.
Yeah.
And then you'll be back in a couple weeks or so. But you'll be on a regular, you know, regular basis. And we will get to know you very well.
That's
because,
That's frightening.
It is frightening, isn't it? All right. So we want to thank everybody for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun. And so this is Podcast 2.0.
Right.
The American is. And I'd like to say it's important that you constantly reinvent yourself. And we have to keep current, you know, keep what's going on. And this is part of the process.
Yeah.
And I think we did a really good job, even though I can hear Judy in the background making all kinds of noises.
She's the backbone of this office.
Yes,
she's got to.
She really is.
She says it's called work.
Okay. That was your joke of the week right there. Okay. All right. Thanks for that. And thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Shabbat Shalom.